Virgin Radio.
I think we're all pretty aware of the dire situation as far as housing is concerned. It's really quite vital at the moment that we do try and meet the requests or the needs that are out there. Analysing the government's target of 1.2 million homes over the next 5 years and key policy solutions to the housing crisis, joining me now is Dr. Adam Crow. He's from Curtin University's School of Accounting, Economics and Finance. Good afternoon to you, Adam.
Hi, Jenny. Thank you very much for inviting me onto the show.
Oh, it's a very important subject. Now, you went to the conference, did you, not just recently?
I wasn't there in attendance. My colleagues were, though.
Oh, okay. So yeah. There's a lot to be said. There was a lot of people involved in all of this and big concerns, I imagine.
Yes, absolutely. I think one of the key recurrent concerns is that it's clear that market forces alone will not provide sufficient suitable housing that is affordable and well located for Australians.
Well,
and we do need some robust policy intervention to address the needs of particularly lower income Australians.
Yeah. There's a lot of things to consider, aren't there? I mean, homes don't get thrown up in a week. Relaxing guidelines, I suppose, by certain councils. I know here in WA we spoke not long ago about the so-called granny flats are being, you know, sort of favoured a wee bit more and allowing people to consider doing that. When we talk about $1.2 million homes, are we looking at our population to grow that much?
Well, we need those homes. That's essential. But to meet that target,
okay,
we need to be delivering 60,000 new dwellings across Australia each quarter. Current ABS data shows that we're currently delivering 40,000, meaning that we need to rapidly increase our rate of housing completions by somewhere around 33%.
Is this something, you know, that is, you know, because of this couple of decades we've had financially, that sort of thing, why is it that we have such a demand? Have we always had that per quarter?
Look, that's a complex question, and there's many ways that I could answer that. Perhaps one part of the housing sector that we could focus on, which gets the most attention for the need for dwellings, would be the social housing sector.
Yeah, definitely.
Providing housing for most in need.
Yeah.
Traditionally, government they've shouldered the responsibility of housing disadvantaged Australians.
Yeah.
However, that landscape has shifted dramatically in recent decades. So now there's an expectation placed on the non-for-profit community housing sector to take carriage in providing that social housing.
It's always been needed, obviously. I mean, people years back would go on a waiting list for a couple of years, wouldn't they, trying to get a less expensive property to have their families in.
Yes, and that presents a critical issue right now where people can be waiting on a social housing wait list for up to 10 years.
Oh, dear
and
me.
In the meantime, They're left to find suitable housing in the private rental sector, which offers very little security of tenure, has major affordability issues. As a result, the private rental sector is expanding very rapidly. 30% of Australians rent now, with one in three of those households classified as long-term renters. And what we're seeing is a greater proportion of higher income households seeking out more affordable rents to increase their capacity to save for a mortgage. So you've got this competition of lower income households who 20, 30 years ago would have qualified and moved into social housing, competing for the same houses on the private rental market for those who, again, 20 years ago would have already been in home ownership.
Yeah. Where are most of them? Are they homeless, a lot of people, because they can't get a rental, they can't get into social housing?
Yes, homelessness is increasing. Recent census analysis showed that actually over 500,000, so 500,000 low-income households nationally, what we class as inadequately housed, meaning they're spending more than 30% of their income on rent, They're living in overcrowded conditions, really poor quality dwellings or poorly located dwellings, with many experiencing homelessness. And what we're seeing is a rising trend of people experiencing their first episode of homelessness. So that typically, it can include rough sleeping, of course, but it includes sleeping in cars, sharing with friends, family, doing it really tough.
We all consider ourselves, I think most of us do anyway, that we're lucky to live in a country like Australia because it's democratic, we can freedom of speech to a point, and we can expect a home in the past. And this has come about shockingly, I think, to most people here, that they're waiting up to 10 years. Can I ask you about migration numbers? There was a statement, I think, from the federal government, wasn't there, to say that they were going to cut back the numbers for some time?
Yes, that's correct. And to be clear, migration certainly isn't my area of expertise, but what I've gleaned from the research is that there is quite a conundrum, especially if we're talking about the topic of delivering the amount of housing that we need. We therefore need skilled labour to provide that.
Yeah.
So part of the current immigration policy is bringing in that skilled labour that can help to produce that number of housing that we need. But then the conundrum exists is, well, where do you house our incoming international labour force?
It's a catch-22, isn't it?
Absolutely.
Okay, from this conference that was held, which was terrific, I hope there was a good outcome, and planning to have these 1.2 million homes over the next 5 years, that's a big ask. Do you know how they have they come up with an idea of how that can happen?
Look, there's a lot of discussion on that. One of the biggest policy interventions that we have seen is the $10 billion Housing Australia Future Fund, which is designed to provide seed capital or bond finance, essentially to allow the community housing providers, those non-for-profit organisations who are expected to deliver the social and affordable housing that we need, it provides them with somewhat cheaper capital to produce that housing. But the critical issue that's discussed among housing researchers is that it doesn't necessarily provide the financing to deliver that housing. It's more of a line of credit than a specific, development loan or whatnot. So that's a huge issue because the CHPs, the community housing sector, they face a significant challenge. On the one hand, they're now tasked with providing this social and affordable housing that we need. But the costs associated with constructing and managing social and affordable housing, it outweighs the revenue generated from rental payments, which, as we know, are constrained by the financial capacity of the lower income households for which they provide housing for. So that financial gap poses an ongoing conundrum, significant barrier, they're tasked to provide that majority of new social housing, but it's without a stable national funding mechanism to bridge that gap. The supply just is not going to be delivered in the way that it's needed.
It sounds as though it's defeated before it's even started. So the other consideration is, how far do we go out of, established areas? I mean, we can't keep pushing housing right out, can we? Because you need infrastructure, you need schooling and medical and that sort of thing, and that in itself is absolutely huge in cost.
Absolutely, and I would argue, and there's a lot of research to support this, that unlike in other countries and policy settings, Australia doesn't consider the locational aspects of housing to the degree that it should, taking into consideration all of those locational aspects into what I would call the true cost of housing, your transportation costs, additional fuel costs, the potential social isolation that can come from living, 30, 40, 50 kilometres away from perhaps where you used to live, where your main social networks are, but also where, key employment areas. So the locational aspect needs greater consideration, and the ongoing building in in greenfield areas, so, you know, the urban sprawl, building at the edge of the urban areas, it's already creating issues, and it's often seen as a quick policy fix to provide new housing, but we really need to start focusing on the infill of existing areas, which already has that built infrastructure that communities really need and depend on.
Look, you know, we're seeing a lot of apartments being, you know, developed all through the inner suburbs these days, and it is creating quite a good atmosphere, I think. But for social housing, if you went high rise in closer, so you don't have to go right out in the dwellings sort of thing, it can create social problems, can't it?
Absolutely, and that was a huge issue that we saw predominantly in the 60s, 1960s, 70s, 80s, especially in countries such as the UK and to the US to a certain extent. Typically, that's not the approach that the social housing providers, so mainly community housing, but some government, state governments are taking. It's not to provide or to deliver high-rise apartments for social housing. It's more that what we call the missing middle, the medium density, you know, the three-storey walk-up, that's what's really lacking across the entire housing continuum, to be fair. But when social housing is provided in areas that are well-located and has the resources essential, the medium density is what developers and government are targeting, but delivering that at the moment is a challenge due to other market.
Well, it's not only the financing of it all, it's also finding the locations, it's finding empty spaces, you know, to build homes for people that really do. Well, everyone needs a home, let's face it. So what do you think then, apart from the financial side of it and the logistics you've mentioned, what would make this happen, do you think?
Look, one potential scenario, and we are seeing a little bit of this, is more public-private partnerships. So state government, John Kerry speaks quite a lot about this, state government have a lot of land that could be developed for mixed tenure development. So social, affordable, private rental, even home ownership, all in the same dwellings. Government have that land and they're willing to work with the non-for-profit and the private sector to deliver the typology of housing that we actually need. And we are starting to see some of those developments take place right here in Perth, actually on Pierce Street.
Oh, good.
There is a mixed tenure development that is currently underway, which, as I mentioned, will provide social housing, housing for people with disability under the Specialist Disability Accommodation Program, but then also private market rental.
Oh, that's good.
And that mix is quite important if we circle back to when I was talking about that funding gap that the social housing sector have difficulty with in terms of actually making it feasible to provide that housing. Having an element or a proportion of private rental dwelling in a development helps to bridge that gap
and provide
more housing for those across the housing continuum.
You're talking about Pierce Street in the city, are you?
Yes, that's correct.
Wow, that is interesting. Is that an empty building or is it a piece of land?
I think it's currently a vacant piece of land, and it was part of the old newspaper press.
Printing press. Oh, that's good to see. There's a lot of empty buildings. There are a lot of empty buildings in the city these days, aren't there?
Yes, to an extent, yes.
That is interesting. Well, you know, let's just hope that this does happen quicker than it has been. When we look at the monies that are involved and the labour that we need. And I know you're saying migration helps out a lot, but then once again it causes a problem. Where are they going to be housed? You know, the building industry have had a few tough years, haven't they?
Yes. Cost escalation and the labour shortages has certainly been an issue, and there is research to actually show that the untargeted demand side, what we call demand side government incentives that came about during the pandemic, which were aimed at homeowner grants. They played a part in contributing to that issue, where all of a sudden there was $5.2 billion thrown into home building, all within a 6 to 18 month period, and it put a lot of pressure on a construction industry that was already experiencing issues because of the way the pandemic affected international supply chains.
Let's hope it can all come together. You've got a big job ahead of you, Adam, to try and sort it out. And thank you very much indeed for your help.
Thank you very much for having me on the show.
Thank you indeed, Dr. Adam Crowe, Curtin University School of Accounting, Economics and Finance.